The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
The topic this evening is instilling a love for Torah and mitzvahs in our children. Something which maybe in the previous generation we would have thought that we could take for granted: warm, supportive, observant home, appropriate chinuch system, good friends, good neighborhood, all of the ingredients which one would have thought that the love would flow automatically. Unfortunately, we live in a generation where this is no longer taken for granted. Baruch Hashem, so many of us are still privileged to have such nachas and such feeling and such excitement and maybe even passion for Yiddishkeit in the lives of our children. But unfortunately, besides those that Rahman al-Islam have just gone off, but there are so many that are just not excited. Maybe just, there's no passion. There's like, okay, I gotta do it. I wish I didn't. Maybe I wish I would want it a little more. Maybe I would wish it would be a little easier. But that fervor, that excitement, that just doesn't always seem to be something that we can take for granted. And I think that in today's world especially, it's important to explore some of the essential issues that can make a difference in this love and appreciation for Torah and mitzvahs. But I think it really begins, the problem begins, the issue begins, the discussion begins with another concept. Really, it's all about happiness. We want happy children. If our children are happy, happy in their home environment, happy in their classroom, happy in their schools, happy in the shul, happy with their friends, happy in the community, they're not going anyplace. That happiness will breed further happiness. It will allow them and almost stimulate them to appreciate everything that they're doing. Because in their minds, and rightly so, everything is associated with that happiness. If I'm happy at home, then what I do at home must be good because I'm happy. If I'm happy in school, then what we're doing in school must be good because I'm happy. And this goes on and on throughout their lives. And I think one of the saddest phenomenon in our generation is that so many people are searching for happiness. Everybody realizes, you know, after all the jokes are finished and everybody has had their share of saying, well, life, what I really want is money, what I really want is COVID, what I really want is pleasure. But basically, we all realize it's all about happiness. And so much has been written about happiness. So many seminars are given. So many self-help, happiness for dummies. I haven't seen that title, but there must be that title as well. And yet, everyone's searching for it. And I don't know. Nobody seems to find it. It's certainly not easy to find. There's certainly a contrast between our Wall Street people and mental health professionals is striking. In times such as these of financial question, what's going on? Certainly to be in the mental health field is probably one of the best. Everybody is looking. You don't have to be very credentialed to charge a vermegen mit geld, to charge a fortune for an hour, for 45 minutes. So I don't mean to poke fun at the profession. I deal with these people every day, and they're critical for the survival of our kids, oftentimes. But why is it everyone is looking for happiness, and so few people seem to find it? And it occurred to me a long time ago, but I think it's continuously true, That the reason so many people are looking for something that they can't find is because they don't know what it is, so therefore they don't know what they're looking for. What is happiness? It's something so misunderstood and so ill-defined by our society today, by our world today, even by our insular, frum society, that really we don't know what we're looking for. If we want a Torah definition of happiness, I believe the best place to look is in the Loshon HaKodesh. David HaMelech has a great request. Achas shoalti be'eis Hashem. Uiso avakesh shifti be'eis Hashem. David HaMelech says he has one request in life, to sit be'eis Hashem. What does David HaMelech say about sitting be'eis Hashem? Ashrei yoshvei be'eisecho. Happy is the one who sits be'eis Hashem. That was the highest level of happiness. That's what David HaMelech strove to achieve in his life. Osher, spelled with an aleph. Osher, referring to a very high, sophisticated level of satisfaction, fulfillment, happiness. In Lashon HaKodesh, we know that the sheirish of the word is not an arbitrary three letters, but it describes the essence of the concept. And every time that sheirish appears in Lashon HaKodesh, that concept is implanted into that word. The sheirish of osher seems to be ishur, asher, to validate. Ishur is a validation. If a person feels validated, if a person feels good about himself or herself, he is happy. If that is the definition, then the trick for us as parents is to find ways to make our children feel good about themselves. And as much as they feel good about themselves, it's to that degree that they're going to be happy. And when they are happy, they're not going to leave anything in the environment that surrounds them which they associate with happiness. And even more than that, if we or anything that we do or that they do is responsible for making them happy, they will forever be beholden to that source of happiness and cling to that source of happiness and never want to distance or separate themselves from that source of happiness. So then the trick, I think, is to create an environment where Torah and mitzvos makes them feel good about themselves, to validate them, to make them happy. When we as parents, who are a source of Torah mitzvahs, an inspiration to Torah mitzvahs, certainly a force that is moving them towards Torah mitzvahs, are sources of their happiness, are sources of their validation, that cements that relationship even further. And if their teachers, their rebbeim, and their community is the same, then we really have a winning formula here. How do we get this sense of validation from a life of Torah mitzvahs? First of all, let's analyze, first of all, the learning experiences that our children have. You know, we sit around the Shabbos table. We talk, things Mirois fall asleep after the fish or something like that. I don't know, that's what my family tells me. I do, I don't know. But we're together as a family. What are we doing in that environment to validate our children, to make them feel good about themselves? Well, if they're not involved in the conversation because it's above their heads, then they're not going to feel very good about themselves. If they're forced to sit at the table when they're not involved in the conversation or in the singing or in the interaction that's going on, they're not going to feel very good about themselves. If they are not the center of attraction, but rather we are distracted by the guests and by whatever else may be on the agenda for the evening, rather than the focus on our children, that we're not making them feel very good about themselves. So we've really missed an opportunity to make them feel good about themselves. Now, they come home with Divrei Torah, beautiful. And they say the Dvar Torah. and we applaud them, and we say, wonderful, you said it so beautifully. We don't. But let's assume we did. Do they feel good about themselves? Well, better than if they were paid no attention. But how good do they feel about themselves? Like, so what? I had a sheet of paper, I read the sheet of paper, and teacher gave it to me. Like, where am I? Where's my validation? I know how to read. Okay. But if on the other hand, there's challenging and interactive questioning and learning, if there's a kasha that's asked, something that's within reach of whatever level or age group, if we have different age groups, then we have to have different questions and different discussions. And everybody gets involved. And we get an opportunity to think, you said this, no, maybe this. And finally a kid comes up with an answer. And there are different kids come up with different answers. And each one has its merit. And they feel, I created something. I participated in a Torah learning experience around a Shabbos table where I was challenged and I rose to the challenge. And for the moment, I shine. That's validating. And then I associate validation. I associate validation with Torah. I associate validation with Shabbos. I associate validation with the entire family experience. And I feel good about myself. And these are the types of things that we have to be able to do. You know, let's talk for a moment about learning with our children. You know, we learn with our children. So parents say, hey, I learn with my kid. That's a good opportunity to make them feel good. You know what most of the kids say about their parents learning with them? You know better than I do. I forgot already those days. They say that they're just testing me. They're just checking up on me. They're just looking to catch me. They're looking to show that I didn't do anything in school this week. That's the way, I don't know your kids, but that's the way a lot of kids feel. That's oftentimes, and you know something, you can't blame them, because we do tend to be a little bit critical, maybe a little bit too critical as parents, not recognizing that we need opportunities to make them feel good about themselves. Now, an eitzah. Let's say that we were to learn something else that they didn't learn in school. And let's say we were to challenge them to think. And let's say they have the opportunity to come up with ideas and thoughts on their own. You're not testing me because you don't expect me to know this because I never learned this. We're learning together. And I walk out of that experience as a parent and I say, wow, I learned so much from my kid. She came up with this beautiful idea. Let me go tell it to someone else. These are opportunities that exist to validate. I think it's very important to keep in mind as well that if we wish for our kids to be excited or passionate or inspired towards Torah and mitzvahs, to love Torah and mitzvahs, we have to be very careful about teichocha. We as parents feel a very compelling need to reprimand our children. We have to straighten them out. We have to show them the right way. We have to teach them the truth. But the reality is, oftentimes, what we really do is just make them feel bad about themselves. And the avla is manyfold. I made the kid feel bad about himself, so I've taken away from that happiness. I'm the source of the making feel bad about himself, the invalidation, and therefore I have done something to breach my relationship. And I've missed an opportunity to make a kid feel good about him or herself, which could certainly uplift them so much more. If you want the most, I believe, the most extreme example of how devastating reprimanding a child could be, I refer you to the Rashi in Parshas Dvorim, at the beginning of Parshas Dvorim, where Rashi says that Yaakov Avinu learned, that Moshe Rabbeinu learned from Yaakov Avinu that you give teichocha only on your deathbed. Only reprimanded his son only on his deathbed. Why? Because Yaakov says to Reuven, Rashi brings, Reuven, the reason that I have not reprimanded you before I was dying, when he calls in Reuven, I was afraid that had I given you teichocha before, you would leave me, lidobek be'esav ochi, to go and cling to Esav, my brother. Yaakov was afraid that a teichocha that he would give to Reuven, which certainly would have been a lot softer than what some of us do as parents, and to Reuven the tzaddik, who had already done tshuva for his mistake, would leave the tzaddik, Reuven would leave the father Yaakov to go to whom? To Esav. That's the power of teichocha, the devastating power of teichocha. That doesn't mean as parents we can't teach our children right from wrong. But we do have to remember, and especially when we're dealing with Yiddishkeit, discipline. You know what the sheirish of the word discipline is? I don't know if English has sheroshim, but you know what the sheirish is? Disciple. We have to teach. Discipline is to teach, not to punish. It's not about punishment. It's not about consequences. It's about lessons. We have to teach the lessons. If we punish without a lesson, the punishment is only negative. The punishment doesn't make me like you. The punishment doesn't make me like myself. The punishment doesn't make me feel good about myself. And the punishment doesn't teach me a lesson. So it hasn't served this disciplinary purpose. I think that another point that's very important when it comes to Torah mitzvahs is that our children will love what they sense we love. But they will be turned off if we expect of them more emotion, more commitment, more feeling, more passion than they sense that we have ourselves. Which means that if we wish to inspire a love for Torah and mitzvahs in our children, the first goal has to be to feel and to exhibit that love in our own lives. If we have to be pushed and we have to be reminded and we have to be begged and we have to be constantly nudged to do something, whether it's to go learn, whether it's to do a chesed, whether it's to daven on time, whether it's to whatever it may be, then the message that we send is, this is a burden, not a privilege. This is not something that adults crave to do, jump to do, run to do, are excited to do. This is something that they really wish they didn't have to do, but they gotta do it anyway. It's really a burden. It's really, it's something that they'd rather do without. There certainly is no great love, certainly no passion, and that's the model that we send for our children. When they see passion, when they see excitement, when they see not just, you see, diktuk hadin, doing everything right, is a double-edged sword because they see what's right, but it might also create a certain pressure because, oh, we gotta do this, we gotta do this, we gotta do this, we gotta do this, we gotta be exact, it has to be right, it has to be perfect. That creates pressure. But when it's passionate, when it's loving, when it's exciting, that creates enthusiasm. I wanna do it too. I also wanna be happy. When they see the smile, when they see the thrill, when they see the enjoyment, when they see the pleasure, when they see the sense of privilege. Imagine if our children would wake up in the morning and they would hear a father making Birchas HaTorah. And he says, Asher Bucha, Bonu, Mikol Ho'amim, and they'd see, I don't know how you do it exactly, dancing and jumping up and down, but if they were to see ecstasy, if they were to see excitement, if they were to see passion, if they were to feel that it's a thrilling privilege rather than a burdensome responsibility, it would definitely be contagious to them. And in a main, that's what a lot of our kids are saying. They're also saying that they have to see happiness on the faces and in their lives of their parents. A kid who doesn't see happiness at home, people feeling good about themselves, about their situation, about their life, but they're constantly krechzing and complaining and having kindness on this one and the next one and it's always something is always cooking there that's always miserable, that's always depressing, that's always worrisome, that's always troublesome, that's always fractious, they say, this is what it's all about. I'm not interested. What am I needed for? Not everybody has the guts to go far away, but they're certainly not going to be loving and passionate because they haven't seen that a life of Torah and mitzvahs inspires that sense of passion in them. You think it's very important, and here there's a lot of question about it, and I think that to a group of parents, it still behooves us to mention this. There was a lot of discussion about this recently in the press as well, and that is that they have to see that they have to see from us that the Torah way is real, is true. We're confident. If we talk about bitochim, but we don't really have it. If we talk about emunah, but we seem to be a little bit shaky, then these values are not going to be conveyed to our children. We have to exhibit a firm sense of emunah, a clarity of knowing our purpose in life, an ability to answer them and articulate to them, what are we doing here? Do you know, most adult people, and even more, I believe, children, because adults get used to all kinds of things, wake up oftentimes and think, what am I doing here in this world? What's it all about? And if the answer is validating, that Hashem created me, Chayiv kol echod ve'echod lo'imar kol ho'ilam yivra mishili. He could have created the whole world. He would have created the whole world just for me. It's an opportunity for growth, for human perfection, to develop myself so that the Bo'er Yoyim should be able to give me schar in this world and the next. And by the way, don't promise your kids schar in the next world. I mean, you promise them schar in the next world, but if that's the only reward they're getting, it's too long to wait. For the older generation wishing then to be weiter, you know, already, we could think about the next world. They have to know that the benefit is in this world. They have to know that the schar is in happiness in this world. And it is. What the Gemara means, what the Gemara says when it means schar mitzvah bayal moleko, it just means that all schar in this world is ke'ayin be'efes, keneged what schar that the Rabbeinu Shalom really has to give for mitzvahs. But not that there isn't schar in this mitzvah, there's schar in this world too. The benefits are abundant in this world, and they have to feel it. In this world, there are benefits to what they do. Besides that, I think it's also important that they realize why they're doing what they're doing. They have a sense of the individual, the general, and the individual benefit of mitzvahs. If you want them to love the mitzvahs, if you want them to appreciate the mitzvahs, they can't only be a burden. They have to be a benefit. They have to have a sense that I see that if I do this, I gain, I grow, I benefit. There's something in it for me. We live in a generation where it's all about what's in it for me. And a life of Torah and mitzvahs to our children, if not to ourselves, and I'll elaborate in a moment, has to deal with the question, what is in it for me? I think that, just to give you two examples of how serious an issue this is, well known, one is well known, one is not so well known. The Sefer HaChinuch, a book written for a gift, as a gift to his bar mitzvah brocha, 500 or so years ago, by what seems to be a Talmud of the Ramban. It's not clear exactly who he was, Rabbi Aharon Halevi. He writes what he calls Tam v'Toelis, reasons, and Tam also means Gishmak, and benefits. And benefits to Ellis from each of the mitzvahs. He comes to one mitzvah called Sor v'chol dvash lo yisakiru isha l'Hashem, that we're prohibited from bringing leaven and yeast and honey on the mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash. And he stops, he says, I really don't know the reason for this mitzvah. And he's almost ready to leave it alone. And then he says, I'm afraid. If I don't give tam v'toelis for every mitzvah, I'm afraid that the Torah will appear to my son and his friends as a sefer chosum, as a closed book. And I'm afraid, and I quote, Pen yivatu bohem mitoichkach b'na'arusom v'yanichum le'oilum v'yelchu la'hevel. They might rebel, they might kick, they might rebel against all the mitzvahs in their youth and forsake them forever and join the foolishness of this world. I ask you, he gave reason and benefit for 612 of the mitzvahs. And the mitzvah that he's not giving reason a benefit for is not Megel HaMais. It's not like the kid comes every day to the Beis HaMikdash and why can't I bring along the honey? But it's not Megel HaMais. And he's afraid if he doesn't give for one, the whole Torah will seem as if it's beyond them, and it'll be an excuse, I guess, to just forsake everything. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. 500 years ago, in the house of one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, that this, he was concerned with such a phenomenon. And if you'll say that this is only about 13-year-olds, young children, I'd like to share with you something else. The Ralbag at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, in the Toelius, he has different Toelius, so you learn from the different Parshas. He says, from this Parsha you learn, if you want to convince a beloved to do something that's bizarre or musar, painful and bizarre, strange, first thing, don't tell him what you want him to do. Tell him what he's going to get for it, the benefits. Ooh, and once he has the benefits, he says, the cheshek for the benefit will make it easier to do. What's the proof? Avram Avinu with the bris milah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't tell Avram Avinu what the bris was about. He says, enter into the bris with me, and you'll have great nations descending from you, and you'll be zoche in Eretz Yisrael. And only then, when he had a cheshek for the benefit, did he tell him that this is an operation that you're going to have to make? An old man, painful and bizarre at the time, no one ever did it. And only after he, Avraham Avinu, who reached the highest levels of shleimus to serve Hashem, believe of shleim, it made a difference to him too, that he was first given the benefits. If our kids have a sense of the benefits of Shabbos, and by the way, the benefits of Shabbos are hard for little kids. I hear little kids talking about, I don't know how many more hours, I wish Shabbos was over already. But if we constantly give them different toys for Shabbos, if we constantly make them the center of our Shabbos, if we constantly involve them in a way that they should look forward to the Shabbos, then they see that benefit. Later on, the benefits are obvious. To us, the benefits are obvious. But the same thing, tefillah, they have to understand what tefillah does. They have to understand that Hashem wants tefillah, so we should ask Him for everything and anything that we want, and He responds to tefillah. They have to understand the benefits of all the mitzvahs that we do. It's extremely important that they sense that these mitzvahs are making me a better person. When I do chesed, it's not just that I do for someone else. I sensitize myself, and I feel good about myself. I become valid. Chesed validates. When I help someone else, I feel good about myself, and it makes me happy. We find even so, even with kids that have gone off the derech, if you get them involved in chesed, it's an amazing thing. They come alive because they're doing for someone else, and it's a mitzvah, and they're feeling good about themselves. They never felt good about themselves in the observance of mitzvahs. And these are some ideas, just a few, just very briefly, that I think should be considered for this idea of inspiring more love and more passion for Torah and mitzvahs. I think at this point, because the purpose of these sessions was to offer an opportunity for discussion, so I think we'll open up to the audience if we have any. Yes?
One question for Rosh Hashiva. Rosh Hashiva mentioned about learning with the children, and it's a test, and Taka is a test. The difficulty that I have is I can't only rely on the yeshiva to come back to me and say, oh, Taka is not learning the way he's supposed to be learning. Because, you know, like PTA is, let's say, twice a year, and there's 30 kids in a class. There's a lot of things going on, and I feel that it has to start at home, that I have to know what my son is doing, and because I can't give that over to the yeshiva, you know, to come back to me with the feedback to say, your son's not learning.
I hear you. I would suggest to you as follows. If when you learn with your son, he does well and he's passing these tests, then the damage is not there because it's beneficial. He's being validated. If, however, you're having trouble with that, then you must, it behooves you to find some other ways. A Rebbe can be called. A Rebbe can be called. You don't have to wait for PTA. In fact, a Rebbe who is not called occasionally by a parent senses that the parent really isn't involved and may not care that much and will pay less attention to that student. The Rebbe has to be called. The Rebbe has to be called. Or you meet the Rebbe, you make an appointment with the Rebbe. If the PTA is twice a year, the Rebbe should be called six times a semester. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's something like that. That can be done. Sometimes you get an outside person, a chavrusa, a mentor, someone to learn with your son, and let him do the stuff that they did in school. So he's not appearing as a tester or as a threat or as a criticizer. And even if he does, like, he's not my father, who cares? It's not as serious. If you are having a problem, if your kid is not doing well and he is resentful, as we can often see, like, you know, the resentment is very simple. I don't want to learn with you. If you have to push him to learn with you, if you have to, generally, if he's excited about learning you, you know, then you don't even have to learn with him. You know already he's doing good. And if he's avoiding it, you know, so I think it's important. But that relationship has to be kept on a positive level. Then you become part of the system that validates him in learning. And that's something that he carries with him, makes him feel good about himself and everything he does. Yes? Yes?
You mentioned before the children should understand the benefits, not only like the Muhammad or the Hazrat. This is more as a Rebbe. The Rebbe is teaching the Amarebbe, and the children have their own home. I'm trying to do everything that you said in the realm of the classroom, with the passion and everything. And as much as I think the children see the passion and they understand the benefits, the Oisha Chayim from the Limud HaTorah, they walk out of that classroom. The question is, if you have suggestions, they walk out, there's a lot going on out here in the world. And to a young person especially, we understand the benefits, but the young person, the kindness, the different things that the calling out there overweigh the Oisha Chayim that I'm trying to fakoy, that I'm trying to sell. How do we get them to realize that what I'm selling is a lot more valuable than what they? The Degel HaKafan says that the answer is matter is achiz senayim. It's just a mirage. But how do we get people to realize that?
Okay, a very good question, and certainly as relevant for parents as it is for a Rebbe, and maybe even more so, because parents may have even more opportunities over a longer period of time to try to. Now, one thing, if our emphasis is on the thrill that we get from Olam Hazeh, then we're reinforcing that message that, well, this is the stuff that makes you happy. If, on the other hand, we use every opportunity to try to gently, and again, anything we do has to be gentle. When you try to convince someone, when you talk at them, down at them, too strongly at them, they recoil. They try to, you know, hide. They try to, the defense mechanisms go up. But if they could hear from time to time, you know, look at that, everything and yet nothing. Kids can see that. You know, sometimes I've done with kids just like an exercise, which maybe might work for a parent. I say, think about two things that you did a month ago. One was an act of kindness where you really helped somebody, and the other one was the thrill, the greatest pleasure, the most delicious food, the most, you know. Right now, which one do you feel better about? And the kid realizes, invariably, that the one that I did, you know, it is a pleasant memory, but it really doesn't do anything for me in terms of my chushim, in terms of my senses. I have nothing from it. That steak was delicious. I remember having a delicious steak, but gosh, there's nothing left. The chesed that I did, and I want to tell you a chiddush that I just said recently. I always thought that when I do chesed, or when I help someone, or when I do something good for someone else, so then at least that happiness remains with me every time I think of that person, every time I see that person. I realize that it's not true. It's part of me 24/7. Because when I do something for someone, I feel good about myself. And if I feel good about myself, I enhance my own self-worth, my own validation, and I walk around with that 24/7. I walk around with that my whole life. That's what it's about. I have done good. A pleasure that I have, to the contrary, this is another, this is a little sophisticated. I'm not saying talk to your three-year-old this way, you know, but a pleasure, let's say I have a pleasure. So I feel good if I eat steak. I feel good if I drink whatever your kid is drinking, okay? So that means I don't feel good about myself. I need that outside intake to feel good. I feel bad. They can eventually, at a higher level, see that the outside pleasures are not making me feel good. They make me feel bad because they make me feel relief from the emptiness that I have by not feeling good about myself. But if I feel good about myself because of what I've done, because of what I can accomplish, because of what my potential is, because of the privileges that I've been entrusted with, like a life of Torah mitzvahs, that enhances my feeling good about myself. It's a whole different story. I think these are the things, if we create this environment in a home or in a classroom, where we realize that we have great privileges and we have opportunities to make ourselves better. And every time we do something that makes ourselves better, we feel better about ourselves. As compared to the emptiness of this, you know, you talk to your kids, you talk to your students, you tell them about some pleasure. I don't know if you want to admit it about. I mean, I have one song and dance that I go through about this from my youth, which was so long ago. But like, you tell them about, you know, I had this great pleasure and I enjoyed it and it was the greatest thing in the world. I came home. Ugh, now what? Now what? Or I used to tell kids about, I remember overhearing a group of old ladies that went to Atlantic City. And they came back from Atlantic City. And it clearly was, it was clear to me, they were trying to talk it into themselves what a fabulous time they had. Why are you talking into yourself? Because it's over, I have nothing to show for it. I have to talk it into myself. Feeling good about myself, I don't have to talk into myself. And if Torah and mitzvahs makes me feel good about myself, if I appreciate the privilege, if I appreciate the benefit, if I appreciate that it's a source of giving me good feelings about myself, especially if they understand that Torah perfects a person. I'm growing. Every time I do a mitzvah, I become a better person, so I'm a greater person, so I have more to feel good about. That's the stuff that eventually, but again, we have to feel it as parents. We have to model it as parents, and sometimes we have to talk about it as well. Not to preach about it, but to talk about it. Yes? How young, it depends on. So first of all, for very young kids, the things that they daven for, you could help them. Nothing wrong with that. Okay, but just, you know what I mean. All right, and positive experiences, by the way. Hey, look at that. I daven for a new bicycle, and then all of a sudden, I won a bicycle, or my mother just came home with a, you know, like, these things help. They do have to understand that the concept of tefillah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to tefillah, and tefillah is powerful. Chazal tell us that tefillah is never turned away completely. Tefillah is a machzor. However, oftentimes, and this is my view on it, the answer is not no. That's what some people say. Oh, the answer sometimes is no. That's how he answers. No. The answer is not now. You teach them that soro imenu. Lomo nisakro hoi mois. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mis'aveh l'tfilos shel tzadikim. Soro imenu had to wait 90 years until she had a child. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu craves her tefillah. It's not that he needed her tefillah, but she uplifts herself. Hashem wants you to continue that. You become closer to Hashem. You appreciate Hashem more. It's for us. He creates situations where we have to involve ourselves more with Him in order to earn or in order to appreciate more. And then He responds. So now, there are going to be disappointments. There's no question about it. The disappointments, I let me just say something else because this is just tangential to what you're asking, but it's important. I saw from a Talmud of Reb Chaim Volozhin, I don't think it's here in the literature we have here, but he says that in order to fulfill Bishleimusa, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Pesach night, you also have to discuss with your children Tzadik V'Raloi. Because part of the Chesed Hashem is to understand that even when it doesn't seem to us to make sense, He has Cheshbonos which are beyond us. Now, the 4-year-old may not get it. That's why you got to give them the bicycle. Oh, but the 8, the 9, the 10, the 11, depending on their maturity, begin to develop this. But they also have to see that it does work, and it does work. And I have to tell you, it's a personal theory, and you can take it or leave it. It works much more than we think. Hashem's Ashgocha Protis that we see in our lives is often His response to tefillah. His response isn't always exactly what we ask for, but it's really what we really want. For example, if a person were to ask, this business deal should work, and it doesn't. Hashem knows, you want money, you don't want this deal to work. This deal's going to kill you. You'll never survive this deal if you go into it. So he has a different plan. He has to have that confidence in the Chesed Hashem that, you know, that it comes with time. And they also have to know that there is a concept of suffering in this world, and that we have to come to grips with that in a sense of things that we really can't fully understand. But the more positive experiences that they have, the easier it will be to talk about not understanding. We have time maybe for one more question.
You said about the at the same time that we should teach our children what's right, what's wrong. Could you give an example of how you do it without...
Okay. So first of all, timing is very important. When you want to teach at the moment of... when you caught them red-handed, that's the wrong time to teach. Al teratza odom b'shas kaso, and al te teach odom b'shas mapoloso. Doesn't say such a thing, but you know what I mean. So that's not the time. You have timing. If there's a lesson that has to be learned, it shouldn't be discussed as you did something wrong, but it should be discussed tomorrow. We have to be discussing, or even better, if you find something in the parsha, usually there's something in the parsha, find something in the parsha, you talk about it in the abstract. And then you have a little wink at the kid, you know, a little friendly, loving wink, and I got you, you know, they get the message. In an indirect way, teaching about the issue, the benefit, the idea, the concept, rather than the individual who has violated it, it works much, much better and hopefully be effective. All right, I think our time is up. We're being moved on. Shkoyach Kol Tov.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.